out again. Redskins.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Corgitown USA. If you have been listening to us or viewing us, thank you so much. We are wrapping up season four.
Yep.
And we thank you so much for sticking with us as we approach our season finale. If you're new here, hi, I'm Candy.
I'm Catherine.
This is Chuckles in my lap. He is our spokes corg.
Somewhere around is my son Digby.
Probably chewing on something or peeing on something.
No, he doesn't pee. He just chews.
Somebody peed. I don't know.
It's not
Maybe it was Mortimer. So we also have Mortimer, Barnabas, Booger, and Hammer. So we have the Corgi Committee here in studio,
yes,
often knocking down equipment and causing pandemonium, and that's part of the wonder of our show.
Indeed.
As such, we hope you like and subscribe to this kind of pandemonium. This is our chaos.
Do subscribe. We love subscribers.
We do. Thank
we love you,
you so
all.
Much. Yes. So we talk about some, especially this season, some yes. harder subjects to tackle.
Indeed.
Some things yeah. that we wanted to talk about. We took a couple seasons to sort of get brave, you know, kind of introduce what we're all about and how we love this corgi life and pet mom and pet dad life and just making our pets centric to our lives. And in that, we are branching out and talking about some things that are hard to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to tackle grief again today.
We're going to tackle grief again today. And, you know, in our household, it's a particularly tough topic because in, you know, for whenever you're watching this, this is being recorded 4 months after, 5 months, April 2023 is when my fiance lost his dog of 15 years, the dog that he
yeah.
went and Lincoln. Picked from the litter and brought home and raised and trained and all of that stuff. And it was a beautiful passing. We were with him in a very comfortable room, not a hospital setting. And I'm always grateful to Emergency Animal Hospital up in Scottsdale for that. They were fabulous in every way, shape, and form. They did nose prints and paw prints. And then for Father's Day, I gifted Eric with a tattoo. He chose the nose print.
So he's always with him.
So he's always with yeah. him with ashes in the tattoo. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yes.
Always be with him.
Yeah.
Well, if you follow us, you listen to us, you're part of us and you understand where we come from. You know how incredibly painful this is. And yeah. it's actually life changing. It's beyond just being sad and grief. It's an entire life change. Your best friend that was with you through so many things and they're so amazing with emotional support to get you through things. And then you turn around and they're not there anymore. So
yes.
we have a guest.
And I'm already crying.
Yeah, oh boy. And you told me I was going to be the wild hair today. So we have, there's an organization called Lap of Love, and we have Christiana Saya on. Should we bring her on?
Yes, indeed.
Welcome.
Hi, Christiana.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank yeah. you for joining us.
Thank you. This is so helpful. And I think everyone listening and viewing will find this really helpful. And if you can, just give us a couple minutes. Tell us about you and what it is that you do in your organization.
Yeah. So I am a grief coach with Lap of Love. Lap of Love is mostly known for offering in-home hospice and in-home euthanasia. And, you know, through the years, they just realized there is a huge need for support in this area. And so what myself and my colleagues do is we have, you know, specific services, but we hold space for people who are in that grief of losing a pet, animal companion, four-legged family member, you know, however they want to identify that and validate what they're going through, help them understand a little bit about the grieving process. You know, oftentimes we don't talk about it. I mean, grief in general, but then pet loss adds another layer to that. And so people feel very sometimes unprepared. They don't know necessarily what to expect or if what they're feeling is normal. So we kind of help process that grief and, you know, offer some ideas of how to practice active mourning and, you know, get through that really difficult period.
Yeah, thank you. And we're so glad that you're doing that. Much needed.
It is a very necessary service. And, you know, it is something, and I work in the grief arena, in neurolinguistic programming and in hypnotherapy and timeline therapy. And even with humans, and we'll delve into the difference in our pets, even with humans, people don't always know what to say. And it's one of those things, like, remember when your mother told you, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. If you're not sure what to say, just say, I'm here for you. And I think it's probably the same with pets. So tell us a little bit about what you see in that arena and what the outside world can do as well.
Yeah, you're so right. People often want to say something, but don't know what to say. And there's a lot of platitudes that people say, you know, and so often I hear people after experiencing grief, looking back and remembering that they said those things and like, oh my gosh, that was not helpful. And having that recognition, because I always say there's two kinds of people in this world, people who have been through grief and people who will go through grief. When we love, we grieve. There is no choice. And so, you know, one thing that I see a lot is, especially in pet loss, is a lot of feeling isolated. You know, it's a disenfranchised grief, which is really a grief that kind of goes unvalidated, unacknowledged by society. And so people, when they feel like this is something that maybe they're only going through, or they're overreacting, people don't understand maybe, oftentimes they won't outwardly share that experience. And so when we don't have those stories out there, people are, you know, it kind of is this like cycle where people think that, oh, I must, you know, I'm on my own going through this. It's also such an intimate relationship that we have with our pets. Typically, they're at home with us and we have that strongest connection, those and the other people in our household. So it's difficult when the world keeps spinning. You know, you're expected to go back to work. Most offices, you know, and businesses don't have pets included in bereavement leave, if they have bereavement leave at all.
Right.
So just, I think that there is a need to express that grief and recognize that this was a family member, that their life mattered and their death matters. And it's okay to feel that way and want to recognize that.
Thank you. Yeah, we had E.B. Bartels, who wrote Good Grief, author, and did some research on this subject and had interviewed several parents, call them parents, but these were parents of all kinds of pets, down to fish, turtles, different birds, all kinds of things, all kinds of creatures. And that we talked about that, about how it has not been normalized in society that it's okay to grieve. And it should be. And so I think we're all part and parcel of this, of trying to normalize that and making it.
Even for me with, you know, our chickens. So Eric and I keep chickens, and my late husband and I kept chickens. And while they're livestock, they're a little bit more to me because I name them and some people don't. And I eat chicken. Okay. And vegans and vegetarians don't attack me. I eat chicken, not mine. Not any that I met when alive. And even when my chickens pass, I grieve.
Yeah, they're part of your family.
They're part of my family. You know, they don't greet me in the morning anymore. That one particular chicken doesn't greet me anymore. And, you know, that's...
So let's talk about why do you think, and in the work you do, Christiana, why does it feel, and I can definitely attest to this, but why do you think it feels even harder to grieve our pets than it does some of the humans in our lives?
Yeah. And that's surprising to a lot of people, even people who are going through it. You know, I hear on a weekly basis, you know, this is harder than when my, you know, insert human family member died. And I think that one, you know, we went back, it's a very intimate relationship, you know, and in the fact of you really get to know each other without any words. It's very intuitive. And you get a lot of physical affection from them, where we live in a world that doesn't really touch each other very much. Right. And having that physical affection is so important. But also, you know, we spend every single day with them. We don't usually do that with most of our other friends and family members. Our entire routine is built around them most of the time. And so just, I'm so glad you said life-changing earlier, because it's not a hyperbole or an exaggeration. You know, that's your life from day to day. And then all of a sudden, this one huge part of your day, sometimes some people's only motivation to get out of bed in the morning is no longer there, their purpose. And our pets offer us something that humans can't. And that is this unconditional love, this non-judgment, this ability to take off our emotional armor that we wear in the world and just be vulnerable with them. On our, it doesn't matter how we look. It doesn't matter if we were on bed, we did have bad behavior. Maybe we weren't our best selves that day. They're not going to look at us any differently. They're going to still love us for our most authentic selves. And it's just this kind of proof that, and it, recognition that we don't have to be perfect to be loved.
Yes.
And they embody that. And that's something that is really special. You know, we don't get that from our humans, even our most beloved ones, because, you know, our humans, they have their own lives. They have bad days at work that they have to work through, but our pets are always there for us. You know, when we're having a bad day, we have to kind of take the initiative to call a friend or reach out to somebody. We don't have to do that with our pets. They're just there in those quiet moments. And that's really intimate and special. And so that relationship is, I think, not recognized.
Totally get that, because, you know, again, speaking about my partner, Eric, in April of 2023, he lost Wiggin, our little honorary corgi and wonderful dog that he had for 15 years. And then in May, he lost his dad. Mm. And, you know, and he and his dad hadn't seen each other in a lot of years. We went the October before to see him. I had the opportunity to meet his father. You know, Eric has some amount of guilt about, you know, why am I crying more for Wiggin than for my father? Well, you had a closer relationship, as you just talked about, Christiana, with Wiggin than you did with Dad.
Well, one of the things I will say about kind of to earmark what you had said, Christiana, is I had a friend. We never want to compare losing children to losing pets.
Right.
But I had told it, and really you shouldn't compare grief.
That's the
bottom line of it, I think. But I had told a friend who has human children, I said, I know you're not supposed to make that. But when I lost my Lilo, I said, I feel like I've lost one. I don't have a human child, but this is what I imagine, this kind of soul crushing, empty, aching feeling inside of loss and missing him. And she actually validated me. It was the most validated I'd ever felt, because she has human children. And she said, it's worse. I didn't expect to hear that from a mother of human children. She says, it's worse. She said, you raise your children to be their own people and have their own lives and move on from where you are and under your care. Your pet is under your care your entire life. That is your baby that stays your baby from day one to the last day. And I was like, that's incredibly palpable.
Yeah.
So let's talk about self-care. Okay. So what do you recommend during the grieving process about self-care? What are ways we can honor and care for ourselves during this?
Yeah. So, and like right after the loss, when it's really acute, it's just all about survival. It's all about doing what you need to get through the day. You know, so drink a lot of water, because crying is dehydrating. So make sure that you're drinking water. I always say, you know, if you don't have an appetite, have some hand-to-mouth foods. Maybe ask a friend or family member to, you know, go shopping for you or get some ahead of time if you are fortunate enough to be able to plan out your goodbye. And, you know, set an alarm on your phone every 4 hours when that alarm goes off. Okay, I'm going to try to have an apple a yogurt, a granola bar. So, you know, allow yourself to, you know, just, you know, it's just reaching that basic minimum of self-care, and doing what you need to get through the day is the most important thing. I would also say in the beginning, it's really helpful to do things such as, you know, tending to something, whether that be, you know, gardening or, you know, making somebody else, you know, a gift or something like that, to sometimes compartmentalize a little bit, get out of our heads, because it's this fine balance between being, we want to be present with our emotions and our grief without being consumed by it.
Yeah.
And that line is really blurry in the beginning. So being intentional about that, if you're able to and you plan a goodbye, try to maybe do some food prep ahead of time so that you don't have to worry about cooking or any of those things, because taking care of yourself, as simple as it sounds, can feel like the most impossible task, right? And getting yourself outside, right? There's something healing about not, like, the trees aren't going to ask you why you're crying, right? It's just, there is something about getting outside that can be helpful and healing. And as you start to move forward and kind of just figure out how to function again, that's when we want to really think about mourning, right? Because grief and mourning are different. They're often used interchangeably, but they're different. Grief is the internal response to loss, those thoughts, feelings, emotions, questioning oftentimes. And mourning is the outward expression of that grief. So, you know, finding things to do that are meaningful to you and your relationship, whether that be writing them a letter, you know, having a memorial for them, having a tribute table, you know, working with your hands is really helpful, making a scrapbook, you know, things of that nature, reading a little bit about grief and pet loss so that you can understand, it's like, okay, these are normal parts of it that I'm going through. So kind of just informing those emotions, because our emotions are always valid. They're not always informed. So allowing yourself to have permission to feel that emotion and check in with yourself a little bit, and also dosing it, you know, allowing yourself to say no. You know, if there are things that are going on, you know, that is just, sorry, let me say that again. If there are events or people invite you to something and it's just too much, allow yourself to say no, but also every once in a while be brave and say yes to something that you feel might bring you some joy, whether that be a new meditation group or, you know, going on a bike ride or something like that. So just really being gentle with yourself as you go through this difficult time.
Oh, thank you. That's a really great tip, having the pre-made food.
Having the pre-made food and drinking water. We forget how much we cry and how dehydrating that is. Yeah. And then the other thing I would say is, whatever mourning or grief you're going through, whatever mourning you do, it's okay. Whatever it is. So some people, I remember my first job out of college, one of my bosses lost her husband, and she was back to work in just a day. And I just thought, well, that is the weirdest thing, until I got older and I realized that's how she dealt with
it. That was her self-care.
That was her self-care, to be there with her typewriter. And she was a copywriter. She liked to type on the typewriter, and then I would put it into the computer. That was her self-care.
Yeah.
And you know, and other people just want to lay in bed and cry, and that's okay. So whatever you choose to do.
Kat just said it's okay to lay in bed and cry.
Yeah. Whatever you choose to do.
Can I just, because I'm sad, because I just feel like crying.
You know, crying is actually evolutionary.
Yeah.
People don't recognize this. And oftentimes, you know, in our groups, I'll find that the first reaction that somebody has when they start crying is to apologize, because we're given so many messages that our tears are a burden on others and that we should deal with this alone. But crying is evolutionary. Studies have shown that in brain scans, before and after an emotional cathartic cry, in the before, our limbic system that pretty much has the basic human emotions is overstimulated. And after a cathartic emotional cry, that brain scan again will show that same person, and that part of our brain is calmed down. So it exists for a reason, you know, yeah. There is purpose behind it.
And I love that you've just validated that that's not your imagination, that you can't take it anymore. You finally lose it and you have that cry and you're like, wow, I do feel a little bit better. Like that you've just exactly. validated that it's not in your head. It's not in our heads.
Yeah.
That they're brain scans to prove it.
And it's weird because sometimes you just like this ridiculously cathartic screaming, crying fit and then stop. Just like,
okay.
A little numb.
It's so yeah. quick. not numb. It's just like, oh, that feels better.
Yeah.
Thank you for the scientific proof.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I want to segue into anticipatory grief.
Yeah.
So talk about, you were talking about preparing for a loss, and then there's also acute grief. So I want to go into that. And I want to share, and I'm going to get vulnerable for a moment, because you're talking about cathartic crying. I have a dog that has degenerative myelopathy. Yeah. Our Hammer has DM. We're nearing some stages here where some decisions are going to have to be made, probably within the next 3-4 months, I'm guessing, based on the timeline. And I'm part of the nonprofit Shade Out DM, and our friend Tawny that runs it is a wonderful resource. We've created this support group, and that happened to me. I've been compartmentalizing, saying I'll grieve him when he's gone. Right now I want to use this time to savor when he's here.
Yes.
But I didn't realize that, you know, your compartments get kind of full when you do that, and then there's nowhere to put them. And I, at one point, it was like 2 a.m. I'm on the phone with Tawny, just bawling my eyes out, going, I'm on borrowed time. I can't handle this. I'm not sure, you know, but it's wonderful to have that. But I will say that exactly, like, I was like, I think I really needed to do that. She's like, yes, you did. Mm-hmm. But that is anticipatory grief. He's still here with me. And I would love for you to tell us kind of about anticipatory grief, because I feel like a lot of people don't know about it, versus acute grief and kind of what to expect with that.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we have the opportunity to talk about this, because it really doesn't get a lot of, you know, airtime in comparison to grief after a loss. But anticipatory grief is the grief that we have when we're expecting a loss. And it carries a lot of the same emotions as grief, but add on anxiety and feelings of dread, right? Because yeah. there's also that not knowing, how much time do I have left? What is life going to be like when they're not here, right? So kind of add those on. And it is something that I'm glad that more people are starting to recognize deserves some of their emotional attention. And you're right, we don't necessarily want to attend their funeral while they're still here, but we also want to recognize that there are losses along the way in anticipatory grief that we're not really allowing ourselves to acknowledge. Like sometimes it means that you've lost your walking buddy. Sometimes it means that you have lost a lot of your independence, because our world can get really small when we are caretaking for a very sick loved one, and we can't leave the house very often. Unlike humans, where maybe we can have hospice workers or things like that, we are their sole responsibility. You know, so I see that resonating with you a little bit. And so there are losses along the way that are important to acknowledge, and, you know, and our relationships change as that happens. And, you know, maybe your quality time isn't going on a hike anymore. Maybe it's laying out in the sunshine together for a little bit, when it's not this hot.
We float in water.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. and so allowing yourself to acknowledge that, and, you know, doing things now to really be present with them and just have these moments that you can really pull out of your photo album and our memory. You know, so I always say, when you're in anticipatory grief, take some time, maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day. Set your timer for 15 minutes and really practice being present. And that means all screens aside, and just be with them. Pet their fur and really try to articulate, how does their fur feel on your skin right now? What does their stinky breath smell like? You know, and where am I? Am I outside? What does the sunshine feel like on my skin? Is there something being cooked in the background that I can smell and take in? Is there music playing? Really just take all of that in. And what that does is it really gives us this core memory, because so often in anticipatory grief, it's a blur, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
So yeah, caught up in monitoring their medical side, right? And planning and trying to, you know, get ourselves still able to function, because unfortunately the world thinks it's okay to just keep spinning when we're going through this. And you know, we have obligations that we still have to attend to. But, and it's, I think it's impossible to stay present 24 hours a day. We have to plan for the future, but giving yourself that 10 to 15 minutes to just, okay, like, and if your head starts to go, you know, to the future, just bring it back. That's okay. Ask yourself, is my head where my feet are at right now? Is my head where my loved one is at right now? Let's bring it back right here. We can do that for 15 minutes a day. We can pull that off.
Yeah. That's a really great tip. And I'm glad that we're talking about it too. And we've talked about it before. And again, it's normalizing, and much to what you're speaking of. I would like to think that kind of like what we're doing with this show and the way society is, we're trying to normalize a little bit that we're humans. We're not machines. We can't, things happen in life, and we have to be able to say that I'm not okay, and I need to just go not be okay, whatever that looks like for me.
Right.
And I'm hoping that there's an evolution going, that this is a little bit more normalized, that, oh yeah, we're not automatons. We have thoughts, feelings, and emotions that we have to process, and we have to manage, and we have to go through.
Right. And Christiana, what would you say is a good response? And I've had my share of good responses, which are not polite. What would you say is a good,
no,
not me. What would you say is a good response to someone? People mean well. I have to keep telling myself that people mean well, and you know, and that they are not as much the idiots as some statements that come out of their mouths. You know, that what comes out of their mouth is not indicative of who they truly are.
It's all intent.
It's all intent. And how would you tell the parent, you know, what are some tips for the parent to, if you're somebody like me, who is just like ready to, or just somebody who will go into a deeper grief when things are said, in all, you know, in all love and in all intention, that are like, are you kidding me? Did you really just say that? So what's a good way for someone to process that, both for the person who's saying that and for themselves, so that they don't go deeper into some place that they don't
need to get triggered?
Yeah, they don't get triggered.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, you know, recognizing intentions is important, because you know, there are some people who don't have as much compassion as we would like in the world, right? And with those people, you know, putting them on a shelf, setting that boundary, you know, that's not somebody you need in your world right now, if you can do that. If it's somebody in your support system who is truly, you know, trying to support you and has good intentions, recognizing that first, recognizing like, okay, the intentions are good, the love is there. Also recognizing intentions aren't necessarily an excuse. Right. And so, but recognizing the intentions allows us to soften that initial, you know, fire that might come up, or that initial despair. And communication, right? People who want to support us but don't always know how, sometimes need to be spoon-fed what our needs are. And part of that is us being mindful of what our needs are and just letting them know, like, you know, what was your objective with that? I think your objective was to support me in my grief, but I don't think we met that objective. And actually, it would be so much more helpful if you just said, I'm so sorry. You know, I can't imagine what you're going through. Or say nothing at all. Like you said, I'm here for you. You know, just a lot, like, it's, you don't have to say anything to fix it. That you're not gonna fix it. It's something that I have to go through, and it hurts. And so maybe if you could just, you know, be with me and be okay with it being a little awkward and quiet. That's what I need more, is just to feel that support. So, you know, being self-aware, checking in with yourself, and allowing yourself to be assertive without being aggressive, with your own boundaries and with your own needs.
Great advice.
Yeah.
Great
advice. I'm glad you asked that question for sure. Thank you. Well, we don't want to keep you all night. We can talk about this, but maybe we can have you on again in the future. Because I know there are a lot of different avenues we can go down. But can you tell us, one, how to get a hold of you and your organization? We will also drop those relevant links down into the description box on both the audio platforms as well as our YouTube page. But also, can you tell us about the services that Lap of Love provides?
Yeah, I would love to. And I would love to join you guys anytime. You know, I can talk about grief all day. And I think it's an important thing to, like you said, normalize, destigmatize these conversations.
Right.
So I'm incredibly grateful that you guys are just giving the subject a platform.
Thank you.
And as far as the services that we offer, we have a few different ones. We have a support group. It meets via Zoom throughout the week, different one, like different days. So hopefully there's one that will fit people's schedule. And we have just a regular support group for, you know, loss that you can always join. We also have a few specific groups. One is for anticipatory grief. I facilitate that group. Mm-hmm. The other is for unexpected and sudden or traumatic loss, because that is a whole other layer of our grief reaction when we do go through that. And the other one is for behavioral euthanasia, which, talk about stigma. Have those groups. They're all free. All of our groups are free, and it's a place to just be with other people who get it, you know, recognizing that you don't have to, nor should you, go through this alone. And, you know, just offer support. You can share if you want to, you don't have to. So that's one of the main services that we offer throughout the week. We also offer one-on-one personal support. So this is where, if you just want to process things, and you have more to say than what is available in a shared time in a group. And that is one-on-one with myself or my fellow grief coach. And that's over the phone. That is a paid charge. That's $50 for 50 minutes. And then we also offer a 6-week workshop called Arms of Love, where we meet for an hour, you know, each week. We learn a little bit about a different aspect of grief and pet loss, what to expect, how to get yourself through it. And then it's a small intimate support group after that. That is $149 for the entire 6 weeks. Those are the main things that we offer, as well as if you are just looking for resources, you can always reach out to us. And then our phone number is, you can call us at 855-352-5683. And we are here just about every day. So, you know, whatever resources or support you're looking for, even if we can't provide them specifically, we are happy to, you know, provide you that information and whatever we can do to help you get through this.
Okay. Thank you for the work you're doing. And like I said, I will share those relevant links down in the description box, so that if you could use the services and support groups, that you will have that information at your fingertips.
Yes. And if you can support these services in any way, it means so much to have these. I know I had them, you know, on a human level, and the services just mean so much. And to have them on a pet level, where traditionally we don't have them, and yet
we're changing that, man.
We are changing that. And thank you so much, Christiana, for leading the way.
Yes. Thank you.
No, absolutely. It's really an honor to be able to help people in this way. And I just want to end with saying that, you know, reaching out for support, allowing yourself to be vulnerable with yourself is not something that weak people do, right? Yeah. Vulnerability is not a trait for the weak. And that's important because grief demands vulnerability.
Yes.
And that's hard for everyone I know.
Yeah.
Being vulnerable, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's incredibly courageous to decide to reach out for support or to recognize that you deserve support.
Well, thank you for saying that. And thank you so much for your time today and what you're doing. And we'll look forward to having you on in future seasons as well.
Yes, this has been great. I'm always happy to come back again. So thank you guys so much. Have an amazing rest of your day.
Thank you.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, well, I cried a little bit.
Oh gosh, yeah, no, you'll let it out, all the tears that came down my.
Make my phony eyelashes come off.
Yeah, right.
Cry off all the glue.
That's. I'm glad I didn't put on mascara today for this episode. Right. Well, smart me.
Well, not all of our content, if you're new here, is this heavy, but we like to have these tough conversations and talk about these because it's needed.
Nobody else is doing it.
There are a few people doing it, but we're glad to be a resource and help. And again, this is being a passionate parent here in the Corgi community. We feel this. We feel this very deeply, and we know you do too. So we want to give you some resources and connect you to people like Christiana and that organization.
Yes.
But we also have fun, squishy stuff too. So every Thursday, we're here for you. Candy, Cat, Chuckles, Mortimer, Digby, Hammer, Booger. Hammer as long as we can possibly have them healthy. Yes. But here the Corgi Committee and Corgi Town USA.
Bye.